with a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Burning on an open fire, protest marching everywhere. Living costs getting higher and higher. Air pollution fills the air.
Oh, hello there. For the 14th time, I almost didn't see or hear you come in. Welcome once again to the Retronauts Holiday Cabin in Parts Unknown for yet another annual holiday special. And this year, I've decided to make things just a bit more festive by taking my collection of factory-sealed retro games, removing them from their packaging, and turning them into amusing Christmas tree ornaments with nothing but a power drill and a piece of string. Can you believe Stadium Events was trapped in that dusty old box for over 30 years? It's a damn shame. But unfortunately, this year you're going to have to find some way to entertain yourself because after 13 years of covering holiday-themed video game topics, the bottom of the barrel has been thoroughly scraped, but good. So, I'm officially out of subject matter unless I... No, listen. Podcasting about some bad old video game cartoon I've already covered is hack, and I know it's hack. And besides, what is this? The year 2013? Should I also create a listicle using nothing but Parks and Rec GIFs? Listen, for now... let's just quietly sit, stare at the floor, and wait for this whole wretched year to blow over. Oh God, guess? And me without a podcast topic. I guess I better open the door and get this over with. Huh. What's this? A mysterious package I'm not expecting? And with no return address? Well, it would be rude to not open this. This is a strange spherical device with a note attached. I'll read it now. Dear Bob, this is you from the year 2050. Thanks to an executive order from President Mr. Beast, all content creators have been gifted one free use of non-harmful time travel in exchange for certain human rights. I've enclosed a device that creates a field which temporarily makes it the year 2013, mostly because I remember getting the same device for myself 26 years ago, and I'm simply trying to complete the loop. In any case, make sure you stay indoors on August 18th, 2029. When it happens, you'll know.
With love, future Bob.
Well, that was nice of me. Now let me just boot up this little device and... oh, God. I have to create a username and password. All right, let's just try this out here. Opening up the window. Let's see if Bob Servo is taken. Oh, of course it's taken. Why is this... oh, right, that's the other guy. Okay, so how about Bob Servo 1, and we're in. Okay. Okay, we're going to activate this baby right now. Wow, he was right. The whole cabin has been surrounded by a bubble that temporarily makes it the year 2013. Just smell that 2013 air. Now, no podcast topic can be off limits. Oh, and I think I know just the people I want to test this out on. Oh, look who it is. It's Henry and Drew. Come on in, come on in. It's so cold out there.
I am mega chilled to the bone right now.
I also have speech impediment.
It's very cold to kiss. Well, because it's so cold outside, I heated up you guys some nice Mountain Dew game fuel. Now, the sell-by date does say 2010, but that's just the recommendation. So, Henry, here is some Cortana coconut for you.
Ooh.
And Drew, I've got some Master Chief melon, and I'm going to have a nice, refreshing, all-natural Baja Blast as we talk about today's subject.
I hope this XBLA code still works. I'm going to be saving this.
I'm sure you can buy some skins somewhere.
for my avatar, I'm going to have the coolest kicks.
There's going to be a skin marketplace somewhere you can spend those points on. Well, welcome to the Holiday Cabin. And Drew, this is your first time here. I hope the journey wasn't too treacherous for you.
No, I was prepped by years of reading Nintendo Power, much like Kevin, our hero in this series.
And I realized that I didn't do any formal introductions yet. Let's start with Drew. Drew, who are you? And more importantly, what are you doing here?
I am here to discuss old TV and video games, so I guess this episode makes, like, the perfect cross-section of my interests. I am perhaps someone you might recognize from a very similar podcast called Talking Simpsons, where I've chatted with these two gentlemen about famous episodes of The Simpsons before. I have my own podcast called Gayest Episode Ever, where we've never done a Captain N episode. And then I write about old video games at a website called ThrillingTalesOfOldVideoGames.com.
And who is our other person here who is a frequent visitor nearly every holiday season since the late 2010s, I believe?
It's been going quite a while. Yes, it's Henry Gilbert. Hello again from Talking Simpsons. And yeah, I could not stop myself from coming in here to talk about another classic video game cartoon I watched as a kid, though not my favorite. I'll just say that right now. Even as a kid, not my favorite.
Well, I'll admit, this is the 14th Retronauts Holiday Spectacular, and I'm absolutely out of video game-related Christmas things. I checked. There are some edge cases. There are some things like there's a recent Pac-Man cartoon that did a Christmas special. I need something to be a little more kitschy than that. So I am being a huge hack and returning to the retro gaming goldmine that is Captain N the Game Master, the classic late 80s, early 90s cartoon that we last covered on Retronauts in late 2013. So it's been 11 years. Prior to this, I was an ignorant 31-year-old, basically a child. Today, I am a seasoned 42-year-old. My opinions about cartoons have been honed through nearly a decade of podcasting about animation, so I'm ready to return to this. It should be illegal to podcast about Captain N in 2024, but through certain circumstances, I have made it possible. So that is the topic for today's podcast.
You know what? There is an unwrapping scene in this episode, so it's thematically appropriate.
Yes, although there's also some weird take on the Monster Mash, which is I was not expecting that at all.
No.
I guess, yes, a man with a big white beard does bestow a gift that is unwrapped by people. So it fits. It actually fits pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I was so focused on wanting to buy a Game Boy, I didn't even see any of these qualities, these Christmas qualities. Well, I want to talk to both of you about Captain N. That's the point of this entire podcast. But more importantly, where it fits into your life, because previously when we covered Captain N on a very short episode in 2013, it was a Retronauts micro, I believe, 40 minutes long, still available online if you want to give it a listen. Ray Barnhold and Jeremy Parrish are on, so you are two newcomers to talking about Captain N on a podcast. I want to know, what is your experience with this three-season cartoon program? Let's start with Drew.
So I think it's funny that we're going to talk like we have different experiences with it, because traditionally the three of us have identical life experiences with most of these things. But I watched this because it was on and I was expected to watch it. And I think it was a really interesting thing to encounter when I did, because I was like, I should like this more than I do. But like, I don't, something about this is weird. I was one of the few kids who actually played Kid Icarus before this TV show existed, because I was a weird Greek myth like nerd. And I was very offended by the fact that it uses the wrong name for Kid Icarus, does not call him Pitt. And then all the other weird things about this. And it's like, this is just something about this is off. And I couldn't put my finger on what it was until much later in life, when I realized it was made by adults who did not love video games as much as I did. And this is just what we were stuck with. But if I watched a bunch of the episodes when you invited me on this, because I wanted to re-experience them. And what I kept coming to is, if I can use a Simpsons analogy, is that fair?
Oh, sure. Yes. It's legal here.
You're familiar. You know that one Simpsons where they get snowed in on the last day of school for Christmas and they have to watch a movie that Skinner makes them watch? And it's like some like cut rate, like C-list boring thing, and it's the kids are irritated, and at one point Lisa's watching it and she's like, this couldn't have less to do with Christmas. And I'm like, yes, watching these episodes, I'm like, this couldn't have less to do with video games. They're just using video games as a mechanism to tell bad stories.
And Drew, I think you folks covered on Gayest Episode Ever the NBC Saturday morning preview special in which Captain N was featured. Is that correct? It's hosted by some of the Saved by the Bell kids.
They're all in it, but only four of them go inside the TV. It's the boys and Lisa, which is weird. But they do talk up Captain N as if it's going to be something real special. This is probably why I was stoked to watch it, because Saved by the Bell told me it was going to be good.
Yeah, I think that was my entry point. I'll talk more about that later. Henry, Captain N and you.
Yeah, I also, because we all have the same childhoods, I was watching all of these Deke shows, and I loved Super Mario Brothers Super Show, and I couldn't have been more excited for the Super Mario Brothers 3 show that was coming out. And then this was along for the ride in my viewership of it, though I definitely fell off of it when I was looking at the episode list. I was like, nope, don't have no memories on this. No, by season two, I actually was barely watching it, and I think my issue was that I had not played Kid Icarus, but we had played multiple Mega Mans, me and my brother, and we loved those, and we owned Castlevania, and I know this will sound like I'm saying, like, me as a kid felt the same way I do as an adult, but I really did dislike that they were different. I was like that when I could watch Mario Brothers, I was like, this seems like Mario Luigi. But when I watched this show, it's like, that's not them. This isn't right. Like, I couldn't vocalize why it wasn't right, but it did bug me in that way. Now as an adult, it bugs me in that it is so disgustingly commercial, even by an 80s cartoon standards, like that. It bugs me there too.
This episode we're covering today, especially the season two premiere Game Boy, it's just titled the name of the product they want you to buy. As for me, again, we're all born in the same year. I don't know if we pointed that out earlier. We're all 1982 babies, so we all encountered this at the same time in our lives. And the Saved by the Bell kids, I had followed them for a season. They had a NBC Saturday morning preview special. They told me I should watch Captain N. I had to listen to them, and I think I watched the entire first season and maybe a bit of the second. I just like seeing my hobby and my interest reflected back at me, because very few things were doing that. People were still kind of dismissive about the idea of video games. But like you, Henry, it did bug me that so many of the details I memorized were different, because little kids love to have a mastery over the things they can access and the things that they can have power over. And for me, that was Nintendo games. I want to learn what all the Nintendo games are, who's in them, who the enemies are, etc. And then when you're presented with something like this that gets it all wrong, it is it's existential. It's an existential dilemma you have as an eight-year-old, wondering, why are you trying to change reality, cartoon?
I feel like this was a crucial off-ramp in, like, understanding, like, what canon is and how canons can be different in different continuities. But, like, we had, like, the Tim Burton Batman movies and then the animated Batman TV series. And I was like, oh, things can be different. But I was a little bit older when I made that realization. This came before I could accept that there could be differences, you know?
Also, yeah. If they were more fun, maybe you'd accept it, too.
Yeah.
I mean, in the past, I think this was listicle fodder. This was cheap internet joke fodder. Coming back to it now, 11 years later, there are some things I appreciate, especially in terms of the art and animation. And now I have a more familiarity with how a show like this is created. I understand what happened and what went wrong. So this will be more than cheap punching down. We're going to try to punch up, if anything, to try to elevate what's going on here.
The animation is better than I was expecting. I watched the first episode and it looks pretty damn good. And they do a good job animating some of these very weird designs for the characters in the backgrounds.
Now, I would give this compared to the Mario Brothers 3 show that was its compatriot. I would say this is on average looks better than that show did, and that show was a slight upgrade from Super Mario Brothers Super Show's extreme cheapness.
Yeah, this is one of those secret anime shows for at least the first two seasons where you watch it, especially this one where they all look like they're just in an anime. Especially Kevin. Kevin is very anime, and Lana too.
I mean, it had to be so painful for the Japanese artists who worked on this to see a character like Rockman / Mega Man go from being like this perfect copy of Tezuka style to this hideous creature in this episode or in this show.
If anything, the characters are over-designed in a very charming way that made them very, very hard to animate. So let's talk about the history of Captain N. Thankfully, new research has been unearthed in the 11 years since I covered this. But in case you are under 37 years old, I can explain what Captain N is to you. It was a short-lived Saturday morning cartoon that mostly acted as a showcase for Nintendo products you could ask your parents to buy you. And in mashing together these different video game realities, it sort of landed on a multiverse concept before that's where everything ended up 30-plus years later.
Yeah, I guess this idea of video world that they can all teleport to each other isn't that different from Wreck-It Ralph, I think.
Or like Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can see the appeal of this.
Smash Brothers has the out of, like, these are toys that come to life instead of, like, this is them. This is that guy in the video game. This is that guy.
They're all real, and the most important guy is named King Charles. So one thing I completely overlooked is the fact that Captain N actually began in the pages of Nintendo Power, not as a comic, but as two installments of serialized fiction. I don't think this came up in the last podcast. If so, I apologize for not finding this out. Now, this is very controversial, and I'll go over it, because this is a real he said, she said kind of thing, and I'm not sure I'm fully on board with this origin story of Captain N. So if you happen to read the Nintendo Power November, December 88 and January, February 89 issues, you were treated to the short-lived adventures of Captain Nintendo, a.k.a. Captain N. And thanks to the Internet Archive, you can easily read this two-part series because all the Nintendo Powers, or a lot of them, are on Internet Archive. And it basically has the opposite premise of the cartoon Captain N. In the first chapter, a Nintendo employee named Brett Randles is the victim of a microchip explosion, and this gives him the ability to take items from the video games and integrate them with his body. There's a sort of Cronenbergian aspect to this where microchips explode and then embed in his skin. It's very odd.
That's freakish. And this sounds also like fanfic written by a Nintendo employee about his life.
It basically is. Yeah,
I can see Drew nodding. Drew, how much familiarity do you have with the original Captain Nintendo character and stories?
So when I did my independent research on Captain N, which will come up when we get to the character design part, I found this little nugget out and was like, I don't remember these stories because I definitely had those issues in Nintendo Power. And I remember the fiction where it's like that kid meets Link and they eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches together. You know what I'm talking about?
I remember that one. Yeah, this was completely a blind spot for me until I actually looked it up and read the stories.
So like, I guess as a kid, I must have been like, that's too much text. I'll read that later. And then never read it because I don't recall ever reading it. But it is there in the old Nintendo Powers. So it is funny that like I completely memory hold the entire thing. That said, I don't think it's that close to definitely be like the inspiration for Captain N. I mean, Captain Blank is kind of a generic concept, you know?
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about who the source on this is very, very soon. But more about this Captain Nintendo character. So microchips explode, they embed in his flesh, he's able to pull things out of video games and incorporate them into his body, but also microchips hit some NES games and then the villains come to life. Mother Brain is one of the two featured villains, but she is really, or in the case of the story, I guess, it is really just a creature that is fueling Ganon. And the second chapter is about Captain Nintendo fighting Ganon in the Nintendo offices. It's very odd, but again, it is the opposite concept of Captain N, where things are coming from games into our reality, and it's not a teenager, it's a Nintendo R&D employee who has magical microchip powers.
Yeah, that it does. I'm curious to hear more on this, but yeah, I now vaguely remember back in the old days hearing, oh, did you know it was ripped off from a Nintendo Power employee? Like, I had heard this story before, but I probably also had that Nintendo Power. But any wall of text with very little pictures, I wasn't going to stop to read that as like a 7-year-old or whatever. I was flipping to find the Howard and Nestor comic page.
Yeah, the comics were more successful, and there's not enough spot art in these stories. It is just a big wall of text. So this two-part Captain Nintendo story was the work of Nintendo Power editor Randy Studdard, and he wrote a semi-expose on his time at the magazine. And honestly, he seems like a real jerk with a big chip on his shoulder. I understand it does sound like he was mistreated and underpaid, but it feels like once you read his 8,000-word expose on the magazine, I'm sure if you asked anyone who worked with him, they would say, oh, God, he was such an asshole. It feels like he's that kind of guy where the account he writes, this is my interpretation, is I was so brilliant. No one understood how brilliant I was. Maybe I was a little headstrong, but all of these females got in my way.
And
a certain lady boss he calls the dragon many times throughout his expose. Yeah.
He sounds like somebody, yes, that everybody like leaves the coffee room when he comes in there during break time. Like,
it's kind of like if Robert Evans worked at Nintendo Power, that is how this expose reads. Like, did I write that preview of Mega Man 2? You bet your ass I did. That's what it really feels like to me.
It reminds me of that turn off the like, the making of Spider-Man, turn off the dark book written by the the writer of it, and who basically says, if only they'd taken my ideas, it would have been great. I told every bad thing I told him not to do, and every good thing was my idea. Like that, you have to question the source on these.
It's sort of like when someone you know is telling you a story about how they were mistreated or insulted, and as the story unravels, you start to realize, like, oh no, you're the villain in this story. You don't have the distance to realize this, but you're the villain.
Is this person's manifesto or whatever, is it easy to find online? Because I actually didn't read that part.
Yes, it is easy to find online. It is linked from a lot of the Nintendo Power entries on, or sorry, Captain N entries on Wikipedia and the Captain N Wiki. So it's very easy to find this. I'm not sure when it was written or where this guy ended up after writing this or where he is now, but this is all still online and very easy to access.
Cool. I want to look into this.
So according to Studdard, Captain Nintendo was his effort to give the company a spokes character with a little more edge than Mario. But after two installments, his editor axed the stories, so Studdard decided, I'm going to make this a marketing proposal to someone in marketing. Just so you know, in his manifesto, he calls this person an insidious little cockroach. So this is the kind of writing he's doing in his expose. He's not shy to let you know how he feels about the people he worked with at Nintendo. So, yes, he brings Captain N as a marketing pitch to this department. Apparently, according to Studdard, this person loved the pitch. This included a Saturday morning cartoon, the entire pitch package. It's just an idea of like where Captain N could be, what he could do, what kind of things he could be involved in. But then this person asks him, Studdard, would you mind if your ideas went somewhere and you didn't get reimbursed for them? Again, this is according to Studdard. And not soon after that, his boss tells him his pitch is being made into a Saturday morning cartoon. And I'm asking all of you out there to take this with a massive grain of salt. There's many more details of the story I'm not telling you. One of the details is he made an oil painting of Captain N and someone stole it off of his desk. So there's also theft involved in this story.
Come on.
Yeah.
Boy. It's like that sounds like somebody who's saying that, like, I have proof I came up with it at this date. But it's like, okay, well, where is this painting? I got stolen off my desk by the mean, awful people. Probably some bitch.
If I can be devil's advocate for a moment, this guy does sound like a jerk based on what Bob is saying. But he could be a jerk and still have his idea ripped off. Those two things don't cancel each other out. Having lived in Los Angeles long enough to know that, like, people get ripped off, their ideas ripped off left and right all the time.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is I'm willing to believe him, but his jerkiness and standoffishness makes me less willing to believe him. It's kind of like disagreeing with facts in his story, but I can totally see this happening.
Yeah.
And it seems like he was mistreated. It sounds like people were being taken advantage of at Nintendo Power in terms of, oh, you're working on the Game Counselor hotline. Why don't you write for the magazine? We're not going to pay you like a magazine writer. And you still have to answer phones and everything, but we need help for this magazine, and maybe one day you'll see something out of it. But those facts seem true, but he seems just viciously, viciously angry about this.
Right.
No, he has none of the, you know, the holding his head high that Howard Lincoln, not Howard Lincoln, the Game Master Howard.
Phillips. Howard Phillips. Phillips.
Yes, Howard Phillips. He also seemed to be asked to do 8 jobs at once, but he at least seemed to have a good time with it until he went to LucasArts and was excited there instead.
So, yeah, you can either believe Studdard, and hey, that's up to you. I find him hard to believe, but I can see this happening. Mm-hmm. Or you can choose to believe that Deke Entertainment independently chose to make this cartoon with the exact opposite concept. So there are two different, he said, she said, but you can see how Captain N could have come into being independently because it's so different than the stories he published in Nintendo Power.
I mean, I feel like you could make as strong an argument that Captain N is a ripoff of Kid Video.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not as familiar with Kid Video. I think it was just not available to me in my area.
I think because we're the exact same age, we're just too young to latch onto it. But people who are a little bit older than us imprinted on them heavily. And based on my understanding of how it worked, it does sound very reminiscent of this, just with video games rather than TV world.
So what makes me think that Deke Entertainment didn't see the Nintendo Power stories is the fact that their original pitch for Captain N was for it to be a cartoon based on another popular game, and that game was Paperboy. So Captain N started as a Paperboy cartoon in which the pitch was Paperboy is the main character, And then video game characters come into our world because the funny gimmick is they find our world as addictive as we find video games. So the pitch for that eventually was called Buddy Boy because they found out there were legal problems with making a Paperboy cartoon. I'm guessing because even though Paperboy came out for the Nintendo, Paperboy was wholly an Atari-owned property. And I don't think Atari wanted their character advertising Nintendo as a whole.
Yeah, that makes sense at that moment. I mean, yeah, that it started those I saw those designs out there for the Buddy Boy show. That makes it also makes more sense that they'd have a kid main character as opposed to a teenager then too. But I mean, yeah, Deke, it's weird. We've talked with other people who worked on shows back then, and they could be that. Like Paul Provenzano, who he worked on the Acclaim version of one of these shows that had, you know, the arch rivals characters and narc characters hanging out. But it could be that informal of like you meet one guy from Nintendo of America that says in a meeting, hey, what about this idea? It could have happened, but it also is just such a obvious idea of like the kid, like it's just the Wizard of Oz. It's as old, it's or older. Like it's just such a classic story idea.
And now it's all the rage in anime. And it has been for like 30 years, I guess.
They should change Captain N's title to be one of those like, I just died and got teleported to Video World to save Princess Lana. What am I turned on? That kind of title.
Yes, it needs to be at least 30 words long and then a reference to something erotic in the title. Yeah. So, yes, the original pitch for the Paperboy cartoon was a collaboration between cartoonist artist Phil Barlow and Deke executive Richard Reynes. And we don't know much about the pitch outside of the fact that it's about video game characters coming to our world. And many of the designs, including Kid Icarus, King Hippo, the Eggplant Wizard, and Green Mega Man, are in place for this early pitch. Now, Drew, did you reach out to either of those two men? I think you have something ready for us here.
Both of them, but it's when we get to the next phase of the design. So, yes, Phil Barlow was the person who designed all the characters in that rendition of the show. And then the characters that came along in the next rendition, which include Kevin and Princess Lana, were not designed by him. They were designed by someone named Marcello Vignali. And I reached out to Phil, asking him specifically if, to his knowledge, he knew if Princess Lana was designed to be a reference to Palutena, who was, at the time, a very obscure Nintendo character. She's basically the princess in the Kid Icarus, who's like you rescue at the end of the game. And there's a lot of weird design similarities between the two of them where I'm like, oh, this has to be it. And I wondered this for a long time since I was a kid who cared way too much about Kid Icarus. And he referred me to Vignali, and Vignali said, the quote is, when we were working on Captain M, the Nintendo Corporation gave us a bunch of 8-bit images of their characters. In some cases, they sent us drawings or packaging art. I can't remember for sure if that was the case with Palutena, but from the look of her design, that was certainly where this design came from, that design being Princess Lana. The similarity is too close to be a coincidence. So apparently that is, like, they needed someone who looked regal and vaguely classical, and they took Palutena and like Kelly Kapowski'd her into what she looks like.
Yeah. It's true. We had Kelly Kapowski and Lana on the same channel on the same morning. It was too much for me, frankly.
Wow, man. The listener to this, and I bet we'll have more. Get this, source this on the wiki page.
Yes, please.
For Captain N.
Yeah. And then pay us money.
I have an article about it on Thrilling Tales of Video Games I can point people to. But the other interesting thing about her being Palutena is that if you look at when Kid Icarus came out, Palutena's design is basically based on Sayori Kido from Saint Seiya, who is also an Athena character. They're like very similar in the way they function in their respective worlds. But that means that Princess Lana is a copy of a copy. Hmm. And I'm sure there are people who watch Saint Seiya and Captain N and didn't realize that like essentially this is like an American version of the same character.
Wow.
Yeah, I really like Phil Barlow's designs now. I think in the past I thought, well, they look stupid. They don't look like they're supposed to. They have a really quirky over-design quality to them, again, that made them very hard to animate. But there's so many of these designs that look like they would be on a goofy, comedic sci-fi novel cover in the mid to late 80s. There's something about them. We'll get to some of the later designs in this episode, but some of them have visual gags kind of baked into the design that I think get lost in the animation. But I do like where this went, even though in the past I thought it doesn't look like the guy on the box. It doesn't look like the guy on my screen. They just created a new character, even though he says his name is Simon Belmont or Kid Icarus.
You've got me softening on these designs now a little, I guess. Maybe they look better on a poster than they do in motion.
I think these designs look best when they're background images. So some of like the design for Princess Lana's castle or Mother Brain's floating fortress, they're actually like wild and really cool. And like you say, they look like old sci-fi novel designs. And it makes sense that Phil Barlow also worked on the ALF animated series, because it's like this, like it's like H.R. Geiger by way of Lisa Frank is like how I would describe what his look is, because like they're really weird and interesting. It's just hard to animate.
Yeah. And not looking like the source material doesn't really help either when you're trying to sell this show to kids. Yeah. So also Richard Reynes was the other guy who collaborated with Phil Barlow on the initial pitch for this. So if his name sounds familiar, you've likely seen it thousands of times because he's been a non-writing producer on The Simpsons since 1992. So every Simpsons episode since the end of season 3, you'll see produced by Richard Reynes, and that's him.
Man, so it comes back to The Simpsons again.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
And Reynes had a big hand in the ALF cartoon, and apparently the pitch for Buddy Boy was going to be more like ALF, a more comedic show. Here it's kind of a serious adventure cartoon that has a lot of gags in it.
That's interesting, man. Like, well, and ALF had the good luck of being like one of the last TMS ones that Deke got to do before they got priced out of TMS. But not no offense to the overseas studios on this one.
Yeah, we'll talk about them. And I had the fortune to watch a bunch of ALF at a bar, the cartoon ALF, ALF Tales. Put ALF Tales on instead of sports, I say, when you're running a bar. At least one TV should be ALF Tales. Everyone else can just be watching the hockey game or whatever. I want to watch ALF Tales and just wonder what the hell's going on. And also, so I want to cover Green Mega Man, because that's a big sticking point with a lot of people. It's where all the Captain N jokes come from. Mostly, they really focus on this. So this is what Phil Barlow had to say about Green Mega Man. Quote, "I played the game for one night on a small TV. I had to rely on memory when I did the color for this pitch art. I wasn't even the colorist on this art. That was handled by someone else. So the Mega Man colored green thing wasn't my call." So I guess it just depends on how old your CRT was, what the tint levels were at, whether or not you saw Mega Man as a blue character or a green character.
I think it's weird that people object to the color of Mega Man and not that, like, this version of it is basically devoid of any real characterization. That seems like the bigger flaw to me. Like, he's a speech impediment. And that's it.
I feel like Kid Icarus is the same character, too, because when I was watching it, this episode, it had been a long time. And when Kid Icarus appeared, I thought, oh, right, his thing is that he's in love with Lana. But it turns out all the men are.
Yeah, which is gross. Yes.
It's all their thing.
I mean, she is hot, yes, but yes, like that doesn't have to be the thing.
Yeah. Well, she's the only girl also, so she's a Smurfette issue as well there.
She is the universe's only woman, Videoland's only woman, at least in some episodes.
There's Mother Brain. Mother Brain's something.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I just think of Mother Brain as an entity.
Yeah, that's true.
Barlow designs are cool, but they're a little off. And what little we know about the production of Captain N the Game Master comes from a 2002 interview with Jeffrey Scott. It's still preserved in all of its tripod glory online with the original formatting. It's 22 years old. No one's bothered taking it down. And Jeffrey Scott was an impossibly prolific children's television writer of the era. How prolific was he? He wrote the entire first season of Captain N the Game Master. We will not be covering any Jeffrey Scott episodes here, but that was his thing. He said, like, lock me in a room for a month, I will give you a season of children's television. And that was his thing. And he's still, as of like 2022, I think, extremely prolific. He's still pumping out scripts at this same speed.
Having watched most of that first season while I was like cooking dinner and doing dishes this past week, it's not as bad as you think. Like it is, in fact, maybe even helped by the fact that it does feel like it came from one person's brain, because it gives you a sense of continuity of the world that's harder to achieve when you have a team writing all the stories, you know? Mm.
And comedy is in his blood because he is the grandson of Stooge Mo Howard. So,
oh,
yes.
Whoa.
Yes.
Captain N, does that stand for Nepo Baby?
It was so funny for some other podcast thing. I was doing research on, like, oh, when did this Stooge die? When did this Stooge come around? And it was, you know, there was a book on the last days of Mo Howard, and like Jeffrey Scott was one of the writers on it. I was like, what? Huh? Like that. It reminded me, I think Bob had mentioned it before when we did the Muppet Babies, What a Cartoon podcast.
Yes, we podcasted about that in the armpit of the pandemic. So that was a lot of fun to talk about. We were going insane on that podcast, I believe. So how did Jeffrey Scott get involved with Captain N? Well, apparently Jim Henson was involved, according to Scott. So Jeffrey Scott was pegged to write the entire first season, but a suit at NBC had heard that his Muppet Baby scripts were crap and had to be rewritten. So he got Jim Henson to call the president of children's programming at NBC to tell him that was not true. So in his final years of life, Jim Henson wasted time to get the head writer of Captain N hired.
Wow, man. And this, but that's so funny because like that makes him working on a thing that you would, that my imagination of Jim Henson would hate this video game, this violent video game commercial show.
He wasn't asked his opinion on video games. They just asked him, is Jeffrey Scott good? And he's like, yeah, I guess so.
I don't watch that Muppet Babies crap.
That's what he sounds like. If you've ever seen
him. Come in either way.
Yes, exactly. He's too busy counting the money to watch those episodes. So, yes, this might not surprise you, but Jeffrey Scott was not a gamer, though he didn't develop the show at all. So that developing the show was not his task. He was just handed the story Bible, episode ideas. And according to Scott, he was told which games he'd have to cover, either by Nintendo or the network. And then he'd play a bit of them to get a feel for what they were like. But he mostly relied on outlines provided by Nintendo when it came to learning more about the game. So it seems like he wasn't given enough information in general. And at this point, I assume that it was harder to get resources from Japan. Like, what did Bayou Billy look like in the manual in Japan? What does this character look like? I feel like they weren't really given enough. Maybe just a vague text description of certain characters and enemies.
I hope he at least got Game Master Howard's fax number for chatting about this. But get some tips from him.
Yeah, I feel like that was one of Howard Phillips' many, many hats he wore. He was also like a Captain N consultant.
As far as an assignment for a writer, I almost think I'd have preferred that to what they would have gotten on Super Mario Brothers Super Show, which is just, here's the movie or genre pastiche we're going to do this time. At the very least, this one, they're like, you are going to this game world. This is where your characters will be. So the setting's already made for you right there. And then from that point, Jeffrey Scott can just go. He can pick whatever stock archetypes argue with each other and somebody gets kidnapped in the end.
Yeah, every game world is basically a montage world, which stops you from writing anything too complicated. It's like, oh, now it's the Metroid montage. Now it's the Bayou Billy montage. Now it's the Burger Time montage. So if you look up this interview from 2002, it's very fun to read because Jeffrey Scott is very polite, but you get the sense he's humoring someone who is a huge fan of something he does not remember doing. And this is only maybe 10 years after he finished working on Captain N. So it's not too far in the rearview mirror. But as he gets towards the end of the interview, there are so many answers that say, I don't remember, I don't recall. One of the questions is, why wasn't Samus Aran in this? And he said, well, I've never heard of her, so that's probably why. And then
good answer.
At the end, the guy says, oh, I hope you come back for another interview. And he basically says no in a very polite way.
I think I have a roast in the oven, so I'll get back to you, though.
And yes, he did not come back for a second interview. So that's fun to look up. So check that out. If you just type in Jeffrey Scott Captain N interview, you'll find it. And the interview does point out the fairly obvious bit of trivia that the series was going to be called Captain Nintendo, but it was being produced at the tail end of the Toyota cartoon boom and on the cusp of the 1990 Children's Television Act being passed. So by the fall of 89, NBC could see the writing on the wall and knew that calling a show Captain Thing You Should Buy was going to be a no-no, according to FCC regulations. So they went from Captain Nintendo to Captain N, and that's why it was named the way it was. And the toyetic, super toy-focused children's shows was really just 1981 to 1990. That was it.
They tamped down on it better, but it is like, in this case, yes, he's not called Captain Nintendo, but like, he has everything that you'd get in your Nintendo action deck. Like it names all of these things. Like it just, they got it to work as a commercial while still having it to the level that a politician might notice is not there.
I'm curious why they just didn't call it the Game Master, because they actually use that phrase in the show. Like, that's the thing that exists in this world. Yeah. People don't ever call him Captain N, do they? Just call him Kevin.
They call him Kevin, yeah. I think only the show calls him Captain N. And then Mother Brain will call him things like Captain Ninny. I think only the villains refer to him as Captain N, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, He's got the zapper. He's got the NES belt buckle. He's fully decked out in Nintendo colors even, but it's Captain N. They don't live in Nintendo Land, which I'm sure is what it was called before, you know, the writing was on the wall. So they live in Video Land. And I'm sure Nintendo was a bit annoyed that it was being so broad, but ultimately they were saying the Castlevania world is literally called Castlevania. The Metroid world is called Metroid. We're not referring to these by the places they are. We're referring to them by the product names.
Which makes sense considering the function of the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the show got me to play. We rented Kid Icarus because of seeing this, and of course, I was too dumb of a kid to get it at all.
Well, it's kind of a bad game too.
It is.
Yeah, we did a whole podcast about the entire Kid Icarus series, and it was made under duress. So
yeah,
there's a lot of reasons why it's not very good. So here is basic production info about the series. There's only 34 episodes, and they aired between September 9th, 1989, and October 6th, 1991. And the third and final season amounts to 7 11-minute episodes that were intended to be paired with a Super Mario World cartoon. And technically, this is a separate series because it had to be licensed in addition to the first two seasons as a separate DVD release.
So I see. So I guess that would mean budget-wise, it was coming out of the Adventures, the Super Mario World budget, not its own unique one. Then
I'm guessing it was really truncated, and also NBC was really pulling out of animation at this point. And 91-92 was their last traditional Saturday morning with cartoons. After that, it moved over to TNBC with all of the Saved by the Bell spinoffs and similar shows that were all about kids being paid cheaply on cheap sets, having teen problems.
I watched the last episode to air before we recorded today because I was just curious, because it's the Final Fantasy themed one. And I'm like, It is really weird that there was a Final Fantasy themed episode of Captain N. And Astos the Dark Elf and Matoya the Witch are characters in it. And it looks like so much dog shit. Princess Lana is kind of the main character, but she looks drunk for most of the episode. It's just not a great look.
This is anime, like kind of low budget anime for the time, seasons one and two. Season three, they redesign all the characters to make them easier to draw, because whoever they're giving these to animate, they're giving no money and time. So season three is markedly worse in terms of how it looks. I kind of like just looking at this show because it is just 80s anime, but season three is just hard to look at. But thankfully, there's only 7 episodes.
I always assume that Final Fantasy episode, just like the Dragon Warrior one, is just because Nintendo of America invested a lot in publishing those here and nobody bought them and they have to keep giving them away. So they were trying to give it a push in that early days.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Just trying to get the RPG market started. It wouldn't happen until Pokemon in America.
Well, I mean, FF7, that was how they learned to Sony knew, no, just lie. Just don't say it's an RPG. That'll get them to buy it.
Show full motion video during wrestling events and TV shows. So there were no Captain N toys, though I'm assuming there were T-shirts and folders and things like that. I was looking online and I saw what looked like to be authentic vintage Captain N shirts. So I think apparel is as far as it went. And then Valiant Comics released a 5-issue Captain N comic book series in 1990 as part of their Nintendo Comic System brand. I bought a few of the other Valiant comics as a kid, but I did not like them. I thought they were ugly and bad.
They sucked. I hated those comics, and I would have read any comic book at any time then. All I did was read comic books back then if I wasn't playing a video game, and they just made me feel sad. Like the Mario ones were like, this is the one I remember best of the Mario ones is like he's trying to be married. He won't take off his frog suit, and the Big Bertha the fish wants to marry him. Like in the Game Boy one actually is really weird because Super Mario, separate from the Mario characters, he pops out of his Super Mario Land game, but in the real world, and the Game Boy is just this artifact everybody's fighting over.
It is weird that both this and the Game Boy comics just like really botched the idea of like telling a story that would compel people to buy this product.
Yeah, in this episode, Game Boy is just kind of annoying, and people want to euthanize it, but we'll get to that very soon.
Game Boy will break your toys. There is a Captain N comic, though, where you meet Samus, and they have a big like gender reveal of like, Samus is a girl, so they kind of made good for the fact that What's-His-Face did not know who Samus was.
Yeah, I should point out that Nadia put together an episode about the Valiant comics, and I'm sure they're all easy to read on Internet Archive if you're interested in checking them out. There's not a lot of them, and it's obvious why Nintendo shut them down, along with shutting down things like this. I feel like after 91, 92, they said, we're not doing anything like this. We're doing a movie, and it's going to be great.
Also, Valiant Comics collapsed even harder in than the NBC Saturday Morning in 1992.
Yeah, what happened to them, Henry? Were they around not long after the they defunct not long after these comics came out?
Well, basically, all comic books went bust in 93. Like, it was this huge implosion, 93, 94, I'd say. And Valiant really overspent and thought they got to be the third publisher for a little bit. But then when Image Comics came around, they stole all of Valiant's market. And Valiant probably also wasted a lot of money on licensing these Nintendo comics that weren't very good.
Hmm. Yeah, I assume that the license was not cheap for a company like Valiant.
Though I think in that comics too, none of the it's only Nintendo characters that Kevin meets up with, right? I believe the all of the side characters in this that aren't owned by Nintendo aren't even in it.
Which means you get more Kid Icarus, so I was very happy.
Well, when it comes to animation production, based on the available credits, it seems like all of the storyboards were done in America and then shipped overseas to be animated, which means a lot of people who didn't speak English had to put the pieces together. And that's why a lot of the show is very awkward, even though the drawings are very nice and the animation can be nice. I feel like they were given a lot of responsibilities because the show had to get out the door very quickly. So no studio is credited on the first season, which is very strange. Normally they would say animation services by J Country. Let's not see what the J stands for. It's some other foreign land.
Yeah.
But on season two, the entire second season is credited to Spectrum Animation, which is a studio made up of former TMS employees that animated some of the best-looking episodes of Batman the Animated Series, like Heart of Ice, the first episode produced on Leather Wings, and Beware the Gray Ghost. And actually, they worked so hard on Batman, that's what made them go out of business, because they worked too hard on Batman.
Yeah, I love Bruce Timm on the commentary for Heart of Ice makes this reference like, hey, look how good the frosting on Mr. Freeze's helmet looks. That's because it is airbrushed on each cell. That's the reason Spectrum no longer exists, because they did too good a job and spent too much money. But wow, that had to be an early gig for them, because Spectrum was like a spinoff from, I believe, TMS or Toei, one of those, but started as a spinoff of those.
Yeah, it was TMS, and this probably was one of the first things they did, an entire season of Captain N. So I do want to go over a bit of the cast here and what they did before and after, but I'm only going to go over a few of them, because with a lot of them, the story is the same. There's lots of voice acting and character actor work in things filmed and recorded in Vancouver, especially anime recorded by the Ocean Group. So as I sit here in Vancouver, the entire cast of Captain N is all around me, and I just have to find them. I imagine it's like living in L.A., Drew, although with different circumstances. Like, Harry Shearer could be walking down your sidewalk right now.
I don't think I ever told you guys, but one day I walked out my front door and I saw Mr. Belding walking down the street.
Mm. Well, that's when you call really the
weird
cops.
Yeah, if I was like, this feels wrong. Yeah.
He needs help getting home, I think. So, yes, I want to go over some of the characters here. And then maybe as we listen to the voices, we can pick out a few more. But Kevin, Captain N. Keen, is played by Matt Hill. And he's still voice acting as recently as 2020. Captain N is on his first role, though it looks like it was the beginning of a long career as a voice actor. Notable to nerds of our age, he was the voice of Raphael in the third Ninja Turtle movie. And he was also the English dub voice for Pantyhose in the English dub of Ranma One-Half. And notable to people slightly younger than us, he is also Ed with 1D in Ed and Eddie, the stupid one. So, doing a way different voice for that character.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, the Ed and Eddie is secretly a very Vancouver show. It's from animation, voice, all that stuff.
And I swear, every younger voice actor in this is in that Ranma dub, the one everybody knows and loves.
That makes
sense.
They
stuck together a few years after Captain N. They're all working on Ranma for Viz.
And Princess Lana is played by Venus Turzo, which is an amazing name. And in keeping with the very Vancouver-y theme here, she's a character actor, does a bit of voice acting. After this, she was the dub voice of female Ranma, also Jean Grey in X-Men Evolution, so a lot of roles for her. But to cut to the chase, Mother Brain is played by Levi Stubbs, clearly cashing in on his Audrey 2 fame. He played Audrey 2, the voice of Audrey 2, in the film version of Little Shop of Horrors. He was the lead vocalist for the Motown group The Four Tops, and this is really the only voice acting he did out of Little Shop of Horrors. No one else got him. Maybe he just hated doing this so much he never wanted to go back.
I mean, it sounds like he's having fun. It sounds like he's very comfortable going through all the pitches and valleys of Mother Brain's emotions.
I think he must have cost as much as 10 Vancouverites to get him.
Yeah, he is one of the characters. I think in the credits he is called out in Levi Stubbs as Mother Brain. He gets a special credit, as does the kid who plays Kevin in the live action intro. And he only did one other thing, and it was an episode of some new Lassie show. So he gets a special credit, and the dog who plays the dog in the live action intro. But no one else is credited by, like, this person played Kevin, this person plays Lana, et cetera, et cetera.
You mean the dog they painted the face of? So
yes.
Like Duke? Yeah.
Makes me sad every time I see it.
But yeah, any other general notes on the production before we get to the episode in question here?
The person who voices Kid Icarus is later became very famous. He was on Battlestar Galactica, playing like a kind of grown up role. And it's really weird thinking of that actor who has a certain amount of gravitas on Battlestar Galactica doing the Kid Icarus voice. I can't quite make it make sense in my head.
Yeah, here he is a child with a crackly voice. No gravitas to be found.
Yeah, I think I saw Little Shop of Horrors around the same time as this. So that probably got me to watch Captain and a little more, just that I think as a kid I didn't even really realize it was the same person. I was like, oh, that sounds like it feels more like a thing somebody would have told me, like, in 1994, like, oh, do you know that's the same voice as Mother Brain?
What is sheer lunacy is the fact that they made a Little Shop of Horrors cartoon and they did not get Levi Stubbs to reprise his role. I'm guessing because of money.
Yeah. It's hard to think of a show that is done cheaper than Deke, but they did exist. Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to the episode in question. The episode is Game Boy. It is the season 2 premiere. It aired on September 8th, 1990. And by the way, if you're looking for the episode, there's DVDs, obviously. But the fine people at Wild Brain Entertainment posted all of seasons 1 and 2 a decade ago. And this episode barely has 80,000 views all these years later. So it's safe to say that the show did not retain the kitsch value it once had.
Well, we're changing that today.
Yes.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. I hope to see 20,000 more hits on every video. But it's weird that I've made videos that have gotten more hits than the Captain N thing posted 11 years ago, and that's crazy to me.
And it's the official thing. This is not somebody who uploads VHSs like so many other things. It's just Wild Brain putting it out there. I'm impressed that Nintendo allows this to happen and works with Wild Brain on this instead of, like, locking it down. I mean, maybe there's only so much legal action they can take, but they seem to let it just happen.
Yeah, I feel like there is no working with Deke. Deke just owns the rights to this and they can do whatever they want with it. Or, sorry, Wild Brain. And actually, I walk by Wild Brain fairly often in Vancouver, and I feel like I should knock on the door and try to find the authentic Captain N tapes, because there is one missing episode that's a clip show, but it's not available anywhere. And I wonder if they have it. So to kick things off, Captain N decided to spice things up by having more than one writer on season 2. It's a crazy idea, but they went with it and it worked. And the writer of this episode is Dorothy Middleton. So it's written by a woman, not a guy named Jeff. And she is the story editor for seasons 2 and 3, meaning she's kind of the showrunner in terms of children's television. In traditional TV writing, a story editor is usually the lowest rung on the ladder, or maybe staff writer is and then story editor, and then you get a producer credit and it goes up from there. But in kids animation, story editor was, at least in this point in time, you are the showrunner. You're getting a bunch of scripts sent to you. You're organizing them. You're rewriting them. You're deciding what gets cut and what doesn't get cut. So that's her job here. I don't think there's a writer's room for Captain N, the Game Master.
No, yeah, it is more back then. It's just like, you got the scripts in, make it work, get this in on deadline, and probably get this done, your part of the job done in 2 to 3 months, so they can stop paying you on this freelance basis.
Yeah.
Like, certainly, I would bet you it's not an employee of Deke doing this story editing job.
I don't think so. And before this, I wanted to see what she did. She was also the showrunner for the one season The Karate Kid cartoon. And a chunk of the Police Academy cartoon. She was not the showrunner for all of it because there were 65 episodes. So I think duties were spread around for that show.
Unbelievable. Yeah. No way. I would have thought that's 13 and done. Six? That's insane.
I assumed the same until I clicked on the Wikipedia link and saw it. Nope, 65. They all aired in 13 weeks, and then no one saw them again.
Wow. Yep. Okay, so it was still a one-season thing. They just overestimated. They bet big on Police Academy, the show.
Yeah, I have very vague memories of just seeing it on TV and thinking, well, I haven't seen the movie, so I think I'm missing something.
I think a lot of us just changed the channel.
Mm-hmm.
I think it had the same Ghostbusters deal of like, this doesn't look like you're not looking at Steve Guttenberg on screen here.
And outside of a few minor things after this, her career in television basically stopped. And I tried looking her up and nothing came up. I'm not sure if she's still with us, but it seems like she changed career paths or maybe became an executive, or I'm not really sure where she ended up. But she was, for a few years, show running these very IP driven cartoons.
Sadly, she didn't have the opportunity to become a podcaster back then.
No, no. Although that'd be a great interview. I want to know how the production of something like this goes down, because clearly Jeffrey Scott did not remember. So we open with the opening sequence of this episode, which is a little different than the opening from season one. I like the season one opening more because we get a tour of Videoland, the various characters, what all the worlds look like. Here, this is wholly devoted to setting up how Kevin and Duke ended up in Videoland with the live action footage. And in the first season, the sequence ends with Kevin firing a zapper at the screen, making the logo appear. Here, it's Game Boy right in your face with the logo on his screen. So Game Boy is the focus, really, of season two. And we're going to discuss whether or not he is a Poochie character, because I feel like he kind of is a Poochie of Captain N.
I definitely feel like he is.
Absolutely, yeah.
About this truncated season two opening, number one, it is where I learned the word skeptical, because I had not heard that word before and I had to ask my mom what it meant. Number two, I wonder if the thing they took out of the first season intro is when Kevin's mom yells off screen that it's time to clean his room and he responds by jumping into Videoland. That, like, on some level, they're like, are we encouraging kids to run away from their parents? I think maybe we are. They kind of are.
Or
like,
just
yeah.
Dive into your TV if your mom is sassing at you. See what happens next.
When I watched this opening as a kid, I also think I was a little bothered how similar it was to the Super Mario Brothers Super Show of like, oh, so nobody's a person in this world. Like, at least in Zelda, Link is just Link. He lives there. But even Mario and Luigi, they're teleported into this world and they're just always talking about the real world. They're real world guys. At least you get to see with Kevin, he's a real person who came to the video game world.
I think that's a go-to for a lot of these adaptations. This Mario, also the Masters of the Universe movie. It's always like, what if Thing was in real world? What if real world Thing ended up there? I feel like that's the first draft, and people often don't go beyond that.
Yeah, actually, that was both the plot of the Super Mario Brothers anime film in 86 and also the plot of the 2023 Super Mario Brothers animated film.
And the 93
and kind
movie.
Of the plot of the live action film, too.
Yeah.
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 They're all the same movie. Like, they can't. We said this when we covered the Illumination film, but seriously, how it makes me think it has to be that it's what Miyamoto approves of, and he's the one commonality with those three is that he would have been in those meetings.
We'll investigate later. So we start on the Palace of Power. Lana's here. She's anxiously awaiting the return of her dad, King Charles. And we have one of those now, finally. After 30-whatever years, King Charles exists. For now.
Did we say Captain N predicted it?
I think so. There's not enough Captain N predicted it, actually. We need to start writing those articles, because the Simpsons ones are angering me.
You know, I do have a theory about that truncated opening I forgot to mention, is that I saw that it was Chaim Saban, Shuki Levy was the first season intro, and they are not the credited writers of the second season intro. Chaim Saban superfans know that him and Andrew Hayward hate each other, and they had a big falling out around this time. So they could just be part of the getting rid of the Chaim Saban stuff while they're clearing Deke of his because I believe Saban tried to buy Deke and then couldn't. There was a real mess there.
Well, on this series, Saban and Levy are the composers.
But I think they aren't for this season. I think their music might only be for season one.
Okay.
I was looking into this. I think the music in season one is better, and I feel like they took a different creative direction, and it would make sense if this pairs up with them falling out with Deke.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I didn't notice.
Saban and Levy hired much better people to steal the music from and put their names on than...
So to catch you up on the story of Captain N, there's a bit of a recurring thing here because Mother Brain banished King Charles to a mirror world via a warp zone. These are terminologies that are used throughout this episode. Kevin was summoned as this kind of chosen one figure to rescue the king. And up front, immediately, Lana and Kevin look in anime SL, both looking very hot, depending on whatever you're into. That's the first thing you see. Two extremely hot anime characters up front. And the important fact here is that this interdimensional warp zone only opens every 1,000 video years. And they're trying to get this all worked out so the king can communicate with them. I don't know how long a video year is, but apparently they're going to live through several thousand of them in their lifetimes.
I feel like all the proper nouns in the sentences you just said need asterisks, and the asterisk all goes to this doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything.
Well, mirror world. Is that a Kid Icarus thing or what?
There's a mirror shield in Kid Icarus, but no, I think they just made that up. I think that's wholly original.
It is funny on the hotness level that for Kevin, when they make up like, who's the greatest video game player in the world? And it is a guy who's like, he's the quarterback of the football team. Like,
yeah.
That's who. Where does Kevin find the time to exercise if he's going to master every video game?
So this is the interesting thing. There's an episode in season one. We found out that Kevin was picked on and bullied by a much more jockey kid. And that explains like, oh, I don't think Kevin was very popular. I think he was like a little wiener who just played video games all the time. Although it does not explain why he has a Letterman jacket.
Yeah, I don't know. He's really personified as a Zach Morris smart alecky guy in this.
Just like Zach Morris, he can press pause on the world, too.
That's true, yes.
Oh, good pull.
Wow. Maybe they were stealing from Saved by the Bell. The Zach fellow is rather popular with the children. So, they're trying to open this warp so the king can get through to them. All Captain N has to do is push a button, but he's delaying this for some reason because video games are a specialty. I didn't get this line at all. Yeah, why are you procrastinating? Because I like video games? Okay, don't know.
That's Poochie rules right there. Like, let people know that he likes playing video games up front, just in case they are unsure.
And it's almost like they're launching nukes because Mega Man is having a key extend from his Robofinger to turn in this machine so they can fire a laser out of a porthole in the ceiling. It's very complicated.
My first thought seeing that was like, oh, it's a USB stick is coming out of his head or his finger there. They'll really see his ribbon off RoboCop.
But in our first clip here, it's time to hear about the latest Nintendo product.
Just think, Kevin. Soon my father will be safely home again.
Now don't get your hopes up too high, Lana. He may not have made it to the warp in time.
He'll be there. I know he will.
Hey, there's something coming in.
Princess!
Father! You made it! You're coming home!
Not quite yet, dearest daughter.
But why not? I miss you so.
And I miss you, little one. But alas, there is only room for one traveler in the space capsule. And I have decided it is best for Videoland to send another in my place. He is called Game Boy.
Huh? What's a Game Boy?
He's a remarkable child from this world who can help you battle the forces of evil that plague our land. I truly believe he will one day be our greatest hero. Take care of him, Lana. He's been like a son to me.
Kevin comes very close to saying, what's his name again? I forgot. this aggravated me up front because they could have solved the entire problem, the underlying problem that they're having. He can just come to Videoland and save everything, but no, he doesn't want to abandon a child who lives in Mirror World.
If I'm Lana, I'm like, okay, fuck this guy. Why was I crying every night for my lost father? He has one chance to ever be with me, and he sends us this somebody else with no instruction manual or anything. Like, though, Lana gets over it pretty quick.
But he's also like, oh, this person has been like a child to me. It's like, I'm your child. You've known me for considerably longer, I would imagine. come see me.
I also like that they are saying at the start of the season, you know, well, I guess the premise is dead now. See you later, Kevin. Like, why is this even a TV show?
Don't worry about rescuing me. Just hang out with Game Boy. By the way, his voice is done by Long John Baldry, who plays Robotnik in the funny Sonic cartoon. You can definitely hear it there.
That guy's the greatest. He is such a fun. I talked all about what an interesting, wild man that guy was from when we covered that on What a Cartoon.
Did you talk about how that Elton John song is about him?
That is right. Yes. Yeah. He was a very interesting guy. But man, I can't hearing Lana now in this clip. I'm like, God, I watched too much Ranma One Half in the English language dub. Like I'm just hearing girl type Ranma.
So, yes, Game Boy is coming to visit. Inexplicably, I don't know much about the mirror world, but I guess sentient computer boys live there. And like with Mother Brain, their interpretation of the character is very literal. So they are designing Mother Brain. Mother Brain. Oh, what if it's a big brain character that's kind of like a mad mother-in-law? This one, Game Boy. Oh, Game Boy's like a little brother. So this kind of like a Scrappy-Doo, too, where it's like a little rambunctious kid character. That's kind of what they're going for here.
No, this show, maybe this is another reason I bounced off of it as I'm the only older brother on this podcast. To give a small difference in what's different about us as very similar guys. This is a show about like, oh, everybody's like a younger brother annoying Kevin. Like they just all are like jealous little brothers wanting attention. And now they're adding another little brother to this show.
I mean, we're also just not mentioning the fact that like this show's way for dealing with like having to advertise the Game Boy is making the Game Boy a physical character who exists and talks to people rather than it being just like another plane of existence where you can go into video games, which seems like would be the more obvious way to tackle the subject.
Yes, thank you, Drew. I think I just take this at face value because I've seen it so much, but it is the crassest choice imaginable to have just the character exist in the same form as the product you buy on the shelf.
I guess it could have become another instance. Maybe it would have been more crass if Kevin got it as a new tool, like his zapper or whatever, that it's like, oh, I can do this with the Game Boy. Then it's literally one-to-one of your item and you're playing it. Maybe that's too close to a commercial.
I feel like they should have just put him in the packaging. So it's just a box floating around. So kids know what box to look for. And that first Game Boy box is very cool, by the way.
Also, this guy needs to just be, this King Charles needs to get a vote of no confidence for sending, this kid sucks. Like he is actually wrong in doing this. Lana should just say, like, you know what? I'm the queen now. Forget
yeah, I don't
this.
Trust
this
King Charles' leadership. He's just sending this Game Boy for reasons that are unknown, but he's like, oh, I'll find a way to return one day. And then immediately Simon Belmont enters the scene here. He's trying to get Kevin out of the picture by teaming up with Game Boy, immediately trying to buddy up to this new character, which has not entered the scene yet. He's still coming via satellite.
I mean, if Simon is ready to make his move at all times, he's very proactive too of his game.
And Lana's going through some massive mood swing. She immediately gets over not seeing her father again for 1,000 video years. She's way into having a baby brother to the point where Kevin falls out of his chair at the idea of him getting no attention from Lana.
I guess he's no better than the other boys who want it. Maybe if I'm trying to think of what other old thing they're inspired by here, maybe it is just Peter Pan. Like this is way everybody wants Wendy's attention of the Lost Boys.
Yeah, that could be
Peter
true.
Peter Pan at least has Tiger Lily. Like there literally is not really another female character except for the one episode where Zelda shows up.
And they all argue over who Lana likes best. Even Kevin gets involved in this. And I mean, I would choose maybe one of the two adult men if I was her, but honestly, they're all way too desperate.
Yeah, little guys don't have a clue that they're not really in the running here.
No. It's like when the little kid has a crush on teacher and she's like, oh, that's very cute. Well, I don't read you mega bedtime stories because I want to sleep with you, Mega Man.
Maggie, I mean, also they both have they have problems as well, I'd say.
We just covered the film 8 Crazy Nights on our Patreon, Henry, the Talk to Sense Patreon. I feel like Whitey and Mega Man are related.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They've Whitey is from the same speech impediment school as Mega Man and Kid
Icarus. Just in terms of like the size and shape of the character, I feel like there's a lot in common. So Kevin tells the guys to stop fighting because she's the man, or he's the man for her, rather. And then we cut to Mother Brain, who has her own plans for Game Boy in our next clip.
So, the king's sending the men to a hero. Well, not if I get my tentacles on him first. Eggplant, hippo, front and center.
Yes, my main brain.
You idiot, get up. And get me that Game Boy.
something to kiss. The tractor beam has locked onto something headed this way at mega warp speed.
Here, I'll punch in a close-up.
Hey, it's a mega satellite.
Hey, that's Mother Brain's two goons. They're trying to intercept. We gotta stop them.
Get ready. This is gonna be like taking candy from a baby.
I feel like if any of the freelance writers turned in a script where Mega Man did not say Mega in every sentence and Kid Icarus did not say Ickis in every sentence, they were blacklisted immediately. They did not work in L.A. ever again.
How are the kids going to know who these characters are if they don't have their speech impediments?
They should
that's the story editor's job now in season two, and it's not Scott. She probably had to add in many Megas and Ickis.
I can't believe these idiots left out 8 Megas. This is what they hire me for. So,
boy, Kevin sounds very Canadian when he was saying his line.
Yeah.
One. These two goons.
I just like, this is all designed to sell the Game Boy. The entire season is Mother Brain goes, give me that Game Boy.
Yes. Yeah. Again, as a kid, this did get me to rent Metroid and Punch Out. And when I saw the Mother Brain, like, didn't have a face, or the King Hippo wasn't blue, I was very confused by these things.
Yeah, the color designer was having a really fun time with this show. And also, the character designer was having a lot of fun depicting gigantic male nipples on King Hippo.
They are so distracting.
Yeah, it's as someone who I like a larger gentleman, but he's not drawn in a way to make largeness look enticing at all. It's not great.
His nipples scarred all these children. This is why you don't see nipples on cartoon characters.
That's
much
why.
After
Mario has nipples, though, canonically, right?
Canonically, yes. Yeah.
Say what you will about the villains, they all have pretty clear personalities from like the moment you meet them. You're like, okay, that's the big dumb one. That's the little snivelly one. And then Mother Brain is like an insane diva. And the only one of the good guys who has anything even approaching that is Simon, who's just like gay buffoon. But like, it is interesting that like it's so much easier to write bad guys that have character than it is to write good guys, apparently.
Yeah, Simon is fun because he has a personality. Mega Man and Kid Icarus are just there to tell you exposition while adding their own little speech impediment suffixes to certain words. That's it. That's all they're there for. Yeah.
And Kevin and Lana are pretty bland, too, honestly.
Yeah,
there's just not a whole lot there.
Yeah, the villains are a lot more fun. I feel like this next set piece was supposed to be a game-themed set piece, but they didn't get the rights, or the game owner didn't pay enough money to be featured on Captain N, so it's just generic space shoot-em-up kind of stuff going on here.
Yeah, why isn't this R-Type or something?
Yeah, whatever was that for the Nintendo at the time, like Life Force or Gradius or whatever. It could have been anything like that.
Clearly, Namco was not playing ball with this stuff then.
So this is a kind of a boring little space set piece, but they're trying to intercept the Game Boy satellite because it's coming in from the mirror dimension. I don't know how this works. The show doesn't explain it, but they're trying to grab it out of the sky, Eggplant Wizard and Hippo, with their machine's claws. And this is when Kevin and Simon emerge from a warp zone in a smaller craft of their own, and Hippo and Eggplant go on the offense by firing corn at them through the windshield of their craft. Somehow the corn phases through.
Right. And it's functional corn, but I guess, like you say, that the villains are better defined, at least as like characters with a thing to do. You know, Eggplant Wizard, he can do anything you need as long as it creates a vegetable in it. Like,
and
he's also constantly shedding vegetables as if they are body leavings. I don't really understand how that works.
That's how he reproduces. He produces like spores or buds or whatever. So I want to get through this part quickly. It's kind of boring. Basically, Kevin and Simon do this Beverly Hills Cop maneuver by getting all the corn fired at them and putting it in their exhaust port and tricking them into taking off in another direction, which heats up the popcorn, fills the ship with popcorn, and dispatches King Hippo and Eggplant Wizard temporarily. As we go to commercial break, Kevin says, "Call me corny, but man, do I love this game." And my comment was, "What game? What game are you referencing? I don't know what to buy and I'm scared."
Yeah. What? Yeah, you know, it makes me think that how they later, maybe it was even a late cut, because when they later go into a game and Kevin says the name of the game, it's off screen, which maybe makes me wonder if they're like, in case we can't get the rights, let's not have lip sync for the game name.
Yeah, that could be, just to save their asses in case they couldn't clear it, or the check didn't come in from the Burger Time people. So there's a break. We come back. There's a weird time cut because we start on the satellite floating through space, and then we fade to all the characters standing in front of Game Boy. Game Boy has fully emerged from this craft. We don't know what happened to it. But in our next clip here, we finally meet the thing we can buy.
Well, what do you know? Game Boy's some kind of weird computer.
Just what we needed. A brain in a box.
Let's get his batteries loaded and check him out. Easy, fella. He won't bite. I don't think.
I am called Game Boy. I am programmed to play games.
So, yes, welcome, Frank Welker, to the show. Really doing a Slimer voice. Slimer mania has gripped the country right now in 1989, or 1990, rather. It's still holding on tight. And because Game Boy makes the beeping noises and makes Frank Welker voice noises, I feel like Frank Welker came in one afternoon, laid down all the Game Boy dialogue, and that was it for Frank Welker, a guy who gets L.A. wages on this Vancouver-based voice recording show.
And, I mean, by 1990, Frank Welker already is, like, the most in-demand guy in animation, in voice acting, in L.A. anyway. Like, I think back to Mark Evanier, who was the story editor on Garfield and Friends. He's worked with a million people and is also a professional voice director. He says, your job as a voice director is you interview everybody in town and then you hire Frank Welker. Like, that's how
you have
it
to
works.
Prove you've done the legwork. Or that you temporarily lost Frank Welker's number. Drew, go ahead. Sorry.
Is it worth it to hire him and pay the Frank Welker wage for this? Because Game Boy's voice is really annoying to listen to. And I feel like you don't need to pay a lot of money to get that. Like, that's pretty easy. I'm sure you can find someone who can do that at, like, a third of the cost. It doesn't really just add anything because it's so annoying to listen to.
I think they just wanted to coast on Slimer recognition to keep kids stuck on the floor or on the couch where, oh, this new character, who is he? Well, he sounds like Slimer, and I like Slimer. I'm not going to change the channel. And he floats around. He floats around like Slimer, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I could see them just saying, like, well, if we're going to get a Slimer on the show, let's just hire Slimer. Like, maybe they listen to somebody that let them get Slimer for as cheaply as possible. But then, yes, it bugs me how very little he speaks in this. Like, and then how can Game Boy be a character if he never really talks?
Yeah. And another challenge for the artist is that they have to depict very, very precise pixel graphics on his screen. And earlier with the king, you know, communicating with the characters, they have to kind of fake pixelization with pencil drawing. So I feel like they're asking these animators to do a lot that sounds easy on paper. Like, oh, Game Boy makes this image appear on the screen, but it has to look like it's actually on a Game Boy screen.
Yeah, their concept for Game Boy 2 is like, I think, obviously, they all come to love Game Boy eventually for no good reason, I would say. But if they're going to you want to make me buy a Game Boy, which you don't need to. I wanted it the second I heard it existed. But if you want to do that, make him fun. He needs to be. He actually is. Everybody doesn't like him. It's the reverse of Poochie in that regard. Everybody loves Poochie the second you see him. Everybody here does not much care for
Game
Boy.
That's true. Oh, go ahead,
he
Drew.
Sucks. No, I'm saying he sucks.
He does suck. It's a weird decision to make that I'm surprised Nintendo signed off on, but I assume that they, as long as he was featured on the show, they didn't have any suggestions or care, really. But the second he shows up, he's a jerk who breaks everything, because I guess the working concept is he's a little kid with a lot of energy, but everybody is completely sick of his shit very early on.
he literally will break your other toys. Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, this is such this plot from this point onward is so the plot of just a stock sitcom plot of, you know, everybody tells Stephanie she's annoying. So she runs away from home and the Tanner family has to get her back. Like it's the new little brother kind of story, except here it's in video world.
Yeah, I don't want to go over all the details, but he basically terrorizes every character. And then eventually he overcharges all of the kitchen appliances. They shoot goop over everybody, and he jumps into a warp zone. And that's when the characters end up in Burger Time. Here's a little clip of Burger Time World.
What kind of mega world is this?
From the looks of these outfits, I'd say it's Burger Time.
Oh, yuck. I've got egg on my face.
At least you're not in a mega pickle.
Guess who's our chef?
Ready to commence gameplay. Begin.
I better go get him so we can warp out of this crazy world.
Okay, Hotshot, let's shake this joint.
Hotshot? Shake? I'm playing.
I haven't played this game in a while. I forgot about the pepper. Come on!
This may be mega harder than it looks.
Ooh, it's real hard to hear that voice with nice podcasting headphones on.
Yeah, it's real gross.
Yeah.
Okay, so
go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just have a lot of issues.
Oh, me too.
Number one, why are they playing Burger Time? Why are they not playing a Game Boy game? I realized there was a Game Boy version of Burger Time, but that was hardly like a flagship title for the Game Boy. It's just so bizarre that of all the games that they're jumping into, it is randomly Burger Time in the episode where they're trying to trick us into wanting the Game Boy.
Yeah, no Game Boy games are featured. Instead, it's all of these very old video games. So Burger Time was released for the NES in 1987, 3 years before that, which was like a geological age in terms of Nintendo games. Everyone had just played Mario 3. Nobody cared about Burger Time. And my own thoughts about Burger Time, it's a game, the premise is so cool that no one realizes the game is actually not very good and kind of super, super difficult, but that's just my own take on it. But the other worlds in Captain N, like Castlevania and Metroid and whatever Kid Icarus is from, they all served a function as societies. I don't know why Burger Time is just a fully functioning world that apparently just only exists to play the Burger Time game within.
Right. It's not like they go to a restaurant or something.
I could have also just used an explanation from which you can't do with a character like Game Boy, of Game Boy saying, oh, you guys want to play, huh? Well, I'll give you a food fight. Or just, why did he do this? Like, there's no reason that he beyond being like, I guess he has opened his little bastard kit to mess around things. But I do at least like seeing everybody look silly in their outfits. Even Kevin, who normally the main character is meant to look cool all the time, him in a giant sausage outfit, yeah. It made me chuckle.
Okay, but there's a really weird missing joke where Simon is a fried egg. He's like, I got egg in my face. Mega Man is a pickle. He's like, at least you're not in a pickle. Kevin is a wiener, and there's not a wiener joke, and I am pissed about that.
I feel like NBC, S&P cut the wiener joke.
He should have at least said, well, hot dog, I can't wait to beat this game.
That's the kind of talent they needed at the time. Like Captain N writing stuff. Yeah, it's weird they're not playing a Game Boy game. It's weird that this game just exists for the purposes of playing a game. This kind of reminds me of Reboot, a series that does this idea a lot better, where the characters function within the society, then the game kind of takes over where they are and they have to participate. That feels like what's happening here, but that's not the way this world normally works.
At least the adventure in this game ends with them completing a burger being stacked up. So at least it follows the end of a level of Burger Time, at least.
Yeah, there's a lot of goof em ups where Kevin tries to set his zapper to freeze, but it shoots ketchup and the Game Boy slides around on the ketchup faster than it can float. And there's a real Punch and Judy style, I said, let me have it, when Simon gets the mustard dropped on his head. All of these old jokes that are centuries and centuries old. But you're right, Henry. They do successfully complete a burger in Burger Time, which is a satisfying action in that video game.
That's the best feeling I have in Burger Time. I'm chasing it every time I play it. Once every 8 years, I go to like an arcade convention.
Which is why it's a lot of lighthearted fun outside of all of the breaking of possessions that Game Boy does. But I find shocking we go from this to Kevin basically pulling the plug on Game Boy.
Yes.
It's time to put Game Boy down. He's going to go live on a farm. Let's hear that in our next clip here.
Well, I'm pulling the plug on this Joker until we decide what to do with him.
I know. Let's lock him up in a closet and throw away the key.
Yeah, he's too much trouble as Maximus. That goes mega for me, too.
I just don't understand how my father could have been so wrong about Game Boy. I wish I could talk to him.
No can do, Lana. The war closed hours ago.
We have to try, Kevin.
You know, she's right. Her dad should have sent her something. Tell us what this thing is and why you sent it instead of coming back.
So the way this is structured, you would think that like there's a missing instruction booklet or something, or like he has a switch on his back that's set to annoying, and they're like, oh, that was the problem. That does not actually happen. We don't find out why the dad thought Game Boy was hot shit. And when there's like everyone just decides they love Game Boy all of a sudden, there's nothing that like provokes that. It's just really fucking weird.
And also, I don't believe at the by the end of the episode that she says, oh, this is why Father sent it here. Oh, Father's brilliant plan was this. Like, at the very least, if she's going to throw it out there of like, why would my father do this? I feel like she should have an answer for that at the end of the episode.
It feels like implicitly the message is Game Boy is too much fun and we're tired from all the fun we had with it. It's time to put the Game Boy away and take a break to maybe read or do our homework.
But functionally, this is just like the sitcom of like, oh, everybody thinks that, you know, everybody's saying, oh, I hate this guy and glad he can't hear me. But it turns out they did hear. And you end Act Two with like, oh, dun, dun, dun.
There's a real like Johnny Five moment at the end of this act, because for whatever reason, Duke comes up to the power down Game Boy. It comes back to life. It sheds a single tear and it says defective performance cannot be tolerated. And then it gets a little lick from Duke. And I would say that voids Game Boy's warranty. Nintendo will not repair that Game Boy now after that happened.
The bit too there with that clip of Mega, I'm noticing this every time. When Mega Man and Kid Icarus talk, they both just have the same opinion and agree. And it's just like, then why are these two separate characters over and over again?
Yeah, there's already too much of the bland exposition character in this show. We don't really need another one. I guess this one just beeps more.
Well, I guess because he's cool. Like, honestly, he should have just used this as a time to kill either Kid Icarus or Mega Man and then just have Game Boy take their place.
They check on Mega Man and he's just jammed into Game Boy's battery case. I do want to see that. So another commercial break happens and we come back and check in on Mother Brain's Technodrome, which is the planet Metroid. It's a cool little design where it's a floating steel brain that's kind of pulsating and shooting smoke out of it.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, like you said, all the background elements and painted elements work really good in this show. Yeah, it's the movement that's the problem.
And Dr. Wily is here, I assume, via some Videoland version of Operation Paperclip. That's how he ended up getting hired. because this guy is doing the Nazi scientist voice, 100%.
Yeah, it was. You could do that safely back then, instead of because the Nazis were far in the past. They're never coming back.
And it does feel like Dr. Wily is reading off bullet points on a product sheet, because he points out, I'm not going to do the voice, but he's like, oh, the Game Boy is actually the most sophisticated computer in Videoland, and it can adapt to any situation. You could take it on the go. You can play it at the office, on the bus, with your family.
I guess at least he recognizes what the dopes in on the good guy side can't notice.
And Mother Brain is like the child watching it, because Mother Brain stands as, I want this Game Boy! she wants to control him and turn Game Boy into her own brainchild, is the line here.
But Mother Brain is clearly a bad guy, because she doesn't want to buy it. She instead wants to steal it.
Yeah, she should have bought her own copy at the store.
I agree. So I like how she calls Hippo and Eggplant yo-yos. And I forgot that the threat of Mother Brain is tentacles coming out and I think electrifying you.
Which is just, at what point did Levi Stubbs come in here? Because so much of Mother Brain is functionally what Audrey 2 can do. Like, Tui is stuck in place, has also big crazy lips, and is making all these plans, and mainly grabs things with his tentacles.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I feel like that's where they started with the character, and they said, let's put eyeshadow on Audrey 2 and call it a day. That's really as far as this character goes.
And did they then reach out to Levi and offer him the gig?
I wonder what order it was.
Who else did they consider for this job, really?
Yeah. I think they had to lock him down first. So Mother Brain sends Hippo and Eggplant to head into the Palace of Power, kidnap Game Boy. They don't want to do it. She scares them into doing it. This is when the vegetables fly out of Eggplant Wizard. A fun little gag. I like whenever that happens. They make a fun little popping noise when it happens, too. Fun sound design on that.
It's at least a good wild cartoony take in a show that doesn't always feel like a cartoon or like it's taking advantage of being a cartoon.
So Hippo and Eggplant, they emerge from the warp zone in front of Game Boy, and they first encounter a snarling Duke in our next clip here.
Out of my face, dog breath! Make some magic, wizard! This mutt won't let us near that hunk of land!
This dandelion will do the trick! Hurry and get that battery in before those ant twerps come back!
Ready for disposal of defective unit.
Disposal? No way! Her ugliness wants to play some games with your brain!
I am programmed to play games.
Hey! Be careful! careful! I'm an eggplant, not a squash.
Come on, let's get out of here. This place gives me the creep.
So Game Boy is ready to die, and they're taking him away. And I guess using a dandelion counts as vegetable magic, because you can have dandelions in salad. That was a kind of common thing. But in this form, it is the dandelion that has the puffy seed pods all over it. Yeah.
And it turns into a snarling lion head, dandelion. It's, you know, clever.
At no point did they realize that Eggplant Wizard turns things into eggplants.
Yeah, which is a funny visual comparatively than just, but also that shows you the cheapness they have here. They paid Frank Welker for his few lines as Game Boy. He's not doing those dog snarlings.
No,
that's not it.
As much as I don't like his Game Boy voice, the guy doing Duke's dog noises is no Frank Welker.
Yeah, when you have Frank Welker on the show and someone else is making dog noise, you're asking, what's going on here?
You know that they're being cheap, just like the Simpsons were when they stopped hiring Frank Welker.
So they take away Game Boy through the warp zone. It's so weird that warp zones are in this, and they were such a function of Mario Brothers that this is not a Mario Brothers show. I did want to point that out.
They mention that Mario exists, like, on some level in the first episode, but the only presence we get from Mario games after this is the sound effects, which are kind of nonstop, but most of the sound effects we get are Super Mario 1 sound effects.
And Donkey Kong does show up a bunch, because Kongo Land was a big part of Video Land as well.
But I don't think they realized that Donkey Kong is a Mario character. I think they thought they were separate.
They're not true gamers.
Yeah. Wonderful.
I mean, this definitely is like a separate thing of like, oh, if you want the Mario thing, that's a separate contract, Deke. You didn't get the rights to put Mario in this. This is an umbrella under other things.
So how did they get the contract to cross over with Zelda then?
Yeah, you're right, Drew. In season two, I think there are maybe two or three Zelda crossover episodes that they have their own character designs for the characters that had already been animated the previous year.
And it's the same voice actors from the Legend of Zelda cartoon series.
Yeah, my guess is maybe that was, since they weren't going to make more of the Legend of Zelda cartoon series, maybe they at least thought they could maybe they even had some old scripts they could repurpose for that crossover.
So after they leave, Duke comes out of hiding, barks at nothing. This gets Kevin involved. Kevin realizes Game Boy is missing. King Hippo was given the diagram of Game Boy, and he drops that on his way out because he doesn't have really pockets, so I don't know what, and he has no visible fingers or anything, so this
he
is a bad guy to get paper to. Oh, Drew, go ahead.
He could tuck things under his tits.
That's true. He could just like spear it on his nipple like it's one of those things you use to hold papers on a desk.
Yeah, I will, you know, those bullies, they knew the right thing. All the good guys, they were being mean to Game Boy and making him suicidal. Here they're telling him, like, no, we like you. You're a cool guy. Let's hang out.
Yeah, back at the Technodrome, Dr. Wily is making alterations to Game Boy, basically on an operating table in front of Mother Brain. He's attaching a clamp. He's using the Ghostbusters PKE meter to activate electricity. So Game Boy is being brought back to life and also being turned evil. And then we cut back to the good guys who are beginning to figure things out here in our next clip.
This looks like the work of that nasty Dr. Wily.
Then Mother Brain must have Game Boyicus.
Oh, well, I guess that crisis is over. What's for lunch? Anything but hamburgers.
Simon, what are you saying? We've got to get Game Boy back.
What? And risk this handsome neck for a hunk of microchip?
Suit yourself. I'm going to Metroid, and anybody who cares to join me is welcome.
I'm with you, Princess.
Mega, me too.
I just hope it isn't too late to stop whatever Mother Brain is up to.
Aren't you finished yet, Dr. Wily? Captain Ian and his do-gooders just warped into the other level of Metroid.
I just need to plug him into your defense system.
Perfect. With my brain and his games, I'll be the game master of Video Land.
Master Brain, may I present Game Brain?
So Mother Brain and Game Boy now share a psychic link together, or rather, I guess they're just tethered to each other at this point.
This shows you the evils of modification to your Nintendo products.
Yes. Only use licensed accessories. Do not find a Mother Brain and attach it to your Game Boy.
Yeah, this is the opposite of calling that number or that has Mario with the wrench next to
him. And his nice little suit jacket and bow tie.
But you see, Simon is following the rule of the, you know, the brainy Smurf of all of these cartoons, whose job is to say, why would I want to do the good thing? I want to be boring. But it at least makes him, as a kid, if you like interesting people, it makes it much more interesting than everybody else who's just like, no, we're going to do what we're supposed to. Yeah,
everyone is a real buddy bear.
Exactly.
Am I right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
More Garfield and Friends references here.
So he's finally plugged into Mother Brain and other various devices. That's when Game Boy crackles with electricity, comes to life. He's buff and he's macho. He's grown arms, I believe, at this point. And he asks, like, shall we play a game in a very sinister fashion? And then the
Frank Welker knew he was doing a War Games thing.
Oh, absolutely. And this is when Mother Brain says, okay, the game is called Destroy Them. And he is sent out to dispatch Captain N and his friends who are infiltrating the world of Metroid. And it's hard to tell what happens next, but suddenly Mother Brain is in front of them, or perhaps just projected in front of them. But Game Boy is actually there, I think.
Later they spin away Mother Brain, so she is not far. It's very confusing, but it seems like she vanishes at one point.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like she does fade away at a certain point, but the transparency effect is not really that effective on this.
Spectrum's doing their best with it. Yeah, I have it open right here to look at, and like, yeah, they look a little, they do look somewhat transparent, but it's not the best there. The ability to teleport or not is very random in this series. Like, everybody can teleport if they need to.
But the point is, of all this, that Captain N is going to square off against Game Boy to see who is the true Game Master, or I guess Brain Boy, as he's known now. And this is when they have an epic battle. It all begins here. Mother Brain says, show them your stuff, my pet. And then a bunch of Ryo from Metroid emerge from his screen. I don't think anyone knows Metroid enemy names, because I had to look all of this crap up, and I love Metroid.
Well, it's also tough because they rarely look like how they look in the instruction manual either. So you have to do a little jump off there. Metroid 2, that's still like a year or two away, right? So connecting Metroid to Game Boy doesn't make sense in that
That's
way.
That's 91,
right?
So we're more than a year away. I think it's like a fall of 91 game. One thing I like about the animation, though, I like the weird hand-drawn pixelization effect when the enemies are blasted out of existence. They had to hand-draw all of that. It looks really neat. I like the concept. It lets him kill things on the screen, and you don't ask where they ended up, so I like that.
All the stuff with the zapper is fun. I like the zappers are cool, and I loved my zapper and just pointing it at the screen to shoot things, so I always enjoyed zapper action on Captain N.
So after the Ryo emerge and Kevin blasts them, Mother Brain retreats in our next clip here.
Ooh, that was close. I've never seen that many Ryo traveling in a pack.
Next time you won't be so lucky. I advise you to turn back while you still can.
Yeah! Simon, am I glad to see you.
Simon Belmont does not shirk his duty as a hero.
Maybe you were right, Simon. How can I ask you all to risk your lives for a computer?
We're not, Princess. We're doing it for Game Boy. Come on. If we split up, one of us is sure to get through. Here, Lana, you better take my zapper. Who knows? It may come in handy.
So, yeah, they're doing it for Game Boy. Kids, risk your life for Game Boy.
Mm-hmm. Game Boy is not just some replaceable thing. It is your best friend, and you need to save it. Though, yeah, I think this is a big jump for Kevin here that nobody likes him. Like, I guess his dog likes him, but nobody likes Game Boy.
Yeah, I mean, the show is saying meet your new god, but the characters initially hate this thing and want to kill it.
But yeah, by now they've got a complete turn for no reason.
I really like that they give Lana the zapper, and that she's actually awesome with it, though it makes you wonder, like, why didn't she ever, she should be in the having action and a weapon all of the time.
I totally agree. And this throws us a real curveball, because in our Christmas episode, we're talking about the Monster Mash, and I don't know if the original episode had the Monster Mash, because it seems like someone went to great lengths to write this sound alike that I feel only exists for the sake of Captain N, but we get a montage set to Do the Freak, which is a cheaper version of the Monster Mash. And it's kind of weird that it's here, because they're not in Castlevania. This would make sense in Castlevania, the game based on classic Universal Monsters. Here, they're just shooting space aliens. And I do want to play a little bit of Do the Freak for our listeners, just so you can know there are many monster mashes out there, and this is simply one of them.
Late one night in the doctor's lab, circus and wires were laid out on a slab. The wiring was crossed completely by chance, and suddenly the whole thing started to dance.
Do the Freak.
You'll catch on real fast.
Do the Freak.
You'll see it's a blast.
Do the Freak.
It's totally unique.
Everybody do the Freak.
I feel like the person writing this was having fun when they included the lyric, "It's totally unique." There's
That's
no other
favorite.
Song like this one.
You've never heard it before.
You know, as Simpsons fans, you guys should realize there's a tradition of playing the Monster Mash on the wrong holiday.
That is true. So,
shit.
For the sake of this podcast, we're doing a good job.
Yeah.
No, I have to think that this is just like the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, which had long sequences written to songs that are edited to a specific pop song that then they have none of the rights to. But I am just shocked that at some point, I wonder at what point in Captain N's life cycle did they go to the trouble of paying even the barest minimum of songwriting and recording to get this a copycat song over? Because otherwise, if it was just library music or silence, this would just be unwatchable. But like when was the money spent on ripping off Monster Mash?
I could not find any information about this sound alike, and I really want to know more about it. But I assume it was just written for the show by a guy, paid very little, I assume.
So if you look at just the Wikipedia list of Captain N episodes, the descriptions for season one tell you which song initially aired when they first aired it on NBC. And then when you watch the episodes now, it's not that song anymore. It's something else that they've subbed in. But they don't say that for season two. And I wonder if maybe the departure of the people who were doing music for the show meant that they were just going with sound alike off the bat to save money.
That sounds right. I mean, I feel like NBC was backing away even with season two from spending a lot of money on cartoons, so that could have been an extra cost for them.
Yeah, okay. Then maybe it came late that they edited and timed all of this out to the Monster Mash, and then by the time it's getting closer to air date, that's when they learn in 1990, fall 1990, crap, this can't be the Monster Mash. Get a copy recorded right now.
Well, I don't want to go over the entire montage here. It's basically every character fighting a Metroid enemy. Some of them are depicted in an insane fashion. I want to zero in on Kraid here, because Kraid, we all know what he looks like. He's the big fat monster in Metroid. Here, they reinterpret him as a goofy space alien wearing a Link-style costume, because if you look at the sprite for Kraid in the original Metroid and the art, his green back fur kind of looks like it could be part of a uniform. So that's the interpretation with this character. And he's got all of these spikes all over his body. The visual gag baked into his character design is the fact that one of the spikes has a marshmallow stuck on it. And you only really notice this if you look at the original character design sheet, you can see the marshmallow. And then it's barely visible on the actual character in the show. But Phil Barlow, whoever designed the character, threw in that gag just because he thought it'd be funny if there was a marshmallow on one of the spikes.
Is Kraid the one that fights Simon?
Yes, he's got the spear, which is somebody interpreting Kraid's belly spike as a handheld weapon.
Did not even read him as Kraid because he looks so weird. I assume these were all enemies that were made up specifically for the show. But yeah, you're right. That does seem like it's Kraid.
Yeah, Kid Icarus fights a Zoomer, I think. Lana fights a dragon. That's the name of the enemy in Metroid. I think it's just called a dragon. Simon is attacked by Kraid, and Kevin fights what I assume is Ridley with an algae belly button.
Yeah, that's a hideous Ridley, but I think you're right, too.
Wow. I didn't even see it. Yeah.
I think animation-wise, at least Spectrum, because this didn't have to be synced with dialogue, because it's just all silent action for on their side anyway, that they could do... There's some fun takes in this. Like, Simon and the dog both have really good cartoony reactions to it. Like, they have good wild takes.
The action is fun. You don't have to hear dialogue. And so many of these cartoons really rely on montages because no one is actually a character. So it's easier to fill time with these very long, drawn-out montages that the animation side can handle the grunt work on those. Like, make these last for 2 minutes, make it look exciting and fun, and then we can get back to writing for this group of nobodies afterwards.
I wonder if the writers get the same page rate if they just write down like one instead of dialogue, just one sentence like this character fights that, this character fights that. It continues for 30 seconds and then...
They must write really long paragraphs then if they get a page rate on these. So yeah, a big long montage. Kevin is actually swarmed by a cluster of Metroids and Duke runs off. We go back to Mother Brain's chamber. She's gloating. She's seeing that Kevin and his friends are all dying. Electricity is flowing into Game Boy, and Duke saves the day because Duke bursts in, yanks Game Boy free from his digital chains, and he severs the connection to Mother Brain. And in a very protracted scene, we see all the enemies menacing the heroes completely dematerialize. And then we see Mega Man was fighting something. They just never showed us what he was fighting initially, but we see the resolution of Mega Man's struggle in this long scene.
Did we not mention that Kid Icarus gets covered in white goop?
I forgot to say that. Yes, conspicuously white goop covers his body.
Yeah,
it's funny to see all of your heroes just fail so much and suck at it. I guess though this lets him at least get saved by the dog, not unlike Toto saving everybody in Wizard of Oz.
And now Mother Brain's plans have failed.
Stop him! Excellent! Hippo! Grab that stupid thug! He's pulling the plug on my beautiful plan! Come back here, you bleeping bug chaser!
I'll get him with my string beam.
I'll show you what happens to little weasels who get in my way. What's going on?
I don't understand. He shouldn't be using this much power. He's going to overload.
And in a very Metroid-like fashion, this is when the planet starts exploding. And this is when they have to do the escape sequence. So it's playing by the rules of Metroid.
Yeah, though they should be saying like, oh, the Game Boy, they should be shocked at how good the Game Boy is at conserving power, too. And say, like, wow, these batteries last forever on the Game Boy. So much better than any competition.
Well, Game Boy is able to explode and then look completely immaculate afterwards. So they are saying the Game Boy is very durable.
Hey, we all saw the one from Operation Desert Storm.
Oh, yeah, that was in my notes. True. I think this is the Game Boy that went overseas and served in Operation Desert Storm.
Also, I do note it was with King Hippo. This is your problem if you're making an American cartoon at this time. And, like, it makes sense to have your big Lummox figure as one of your bad guys. Totally makes sense. However, your boxer guy can either punch things or be punched by things. Like, that is not allowed in these cartoons by the censors.
That's true. There's very little boxing happening right now.
Also, apparently you can't just throw a rock at Mother Brain's jar and spell out all her, like, brain juice.
No one ever thinks of that. That's the point of the game. You just shoot missiles into the one hole in the tank, you know?
Yeah.
Some game master that Kevin is here.
To wrap things up here, Game Boy yanks the last cord free, the one attached to Mother Brain, and pulls it. And it sends Mother Brain spinning out of the room, and I assume out of Metroid. And I just thought it must have been so complicated to rotate this character continually out of the room. Mother Brain, there's a reason why this character is mostly stationary, because it is such a complicated character, so many lines, so much pencil mileage, but they're asked for a gag with a very lame punchline to spin the character out of the room.
Yeah, with it's such an asymmetrical design with multiple levels to it. It's, you know, basically a stretched out muscle in front of a spinal cord, all full of like goo and stuff like that. It's so the Spectrum over delivered on that spinning there.
And as Mother Brain spins out of the room, Kevin delivers a very inaccurate pun to end the episode.
Well, it looks like Game Boy's got this mission all wrapped up.
That night at the Palace of Power, an important welcoming ceremony takes place.
You're one of us now, Game Boy. Welcome to the N Team.
Here you go, little guy. We had this made especially for you.
Here, try this.
Why, Simon, how unselfish of you.
Hey, it's all in the family.
You're missing it, but Game Boy was gifted a big baseball cap with the letter G on it for some reason. To welcome him to the N team, I guess?
A hideous hat.
Yeah. Doesn't really fit his head, and it's not the shape for his head at all. Yeah.
Does he? And I don't think he wear. I looked at some later episodes. He's not wearing this hat. This is not his character design, right? Like, he's usually just the regular Game Boy.
They should have given Game Boy, like, a worm light or something to plug into himself. You're going to need one of those in 1990. Actually, they exist yet, so you're in trouble.
Well, Nintendo wouldn't approve of a third-party accessory.
That's
like
true,
that,
yeah.
I guess.
The entire arc of this character, of this story, is, like, just so confusing. Like, they hate him. He's awful for no reason. They hate him. They want him to die. And then they decide that they don't want him to die. And then he's a member of the team. That's it.
I guess he saves them from Mother Brain, and he does defeat Mother Brain. So that proves his worth to the team. But, like, they are saved. He almost killed them first. Like, and that there is a big leap there. Also, it would feel at least a little more satisfying if, after being given the hat or being told you're a member of the team, Game Boy said anything.
Yes, yes. Frank Welker, unavailable to say anything. The pithiest thing is Game Boy to wrap things up.
It's so weird. He just, like, whistles and stuff. Yeah. He has nothing. Like, how am I supposed to care about this Game Boy? Obviously, it's a dumb cartoon. I know. But couldn't he at least say, like, thanks, guys? Like, at least that.
Yeah, or, like, ready to play or something stupid like that. I don't know. Anything. I did want to zero in on Kevin's weird wisecrack, his failed Spider-Man wisecrack, because Game Boy's attached to a tether to Mother Brain. Game Boy yanks the tether, causing Mother Brain to sprint out. Nothing is wrapped up. If anything, something has been unwrapped.
Yeah. You'd say, like, oh, that was a real... You gave her a real spin. Like,
yeah.
At least that. I would think that is maybe on top of how good Spectrum did with what they were asked to. Maybe she was supposed to be tied up like a mummy in her wires from being spun, and that's what the Kevin's line was recorded
for. Yeah, I feel
for.
Like the writing and the animation were not agreeing here, and there were no retakes.
But at least, like, Simon gets to welcome him and offers up his mirror, which is unselfish for him, and it's all in the family, which means, like, yeah, they're all a family of weirdos, but... Meanwhile, Icarus and Mega Man don't get to say anything here either.
No. We don't know how they feel about things. But, you know, guys, the lightheadedness I'm experiencing right now tells me that the oxygen is running low in the cabin. It's time to send the guests away into the inclement weather. Before you go, though, I want to ask each of you, what should the legacy of Captain N be? Let's start with Drew.
Weirder than you imagine it could be, but on some level, not nearly as awful. Somehow it adds up to something that works a little bit better than you remember.
And Henry, how about you?
I think calling people game masters and the parroting of, like, a game master, that's its legacy. Just using that term, and somebody who's like, oh, so good at video games, he can go in them and fight them. But as you know, it's not. I wish it was at least more crass. This is crass, but I feel like there's small amount of fear of the legislation against advertising toys to kids as much. Made them hold back just a little bit, that it's not even as crass as you'd think it would be. But I will give it credit for being better animated than any of the Mario Brothers cartoons. I'll give him that.
Again, it's fake anime. I like that this is the best looking one of these shows anyone ever made before Nintendo said, we're not doing this anymore. Please give us our rights back. We're never going to make anything until much, much later. Yeah, I think the legacy of the show is just the oddness of a company like Nintendo, who is now everything is so close to the vest with Nintendo. Like, no secrets get out. Licenses are treated very carefully. Here, it was the Wild West. The gap between America and Japan was much larger with the lack of an internet, so people couldn't really check in on things. And I like that this just exists. It's not good, but it is just a weird oddity, and thankfully Wild Brain makes it very available to throw in an episode randomly if you ever want to just see what video game culture was like in this era as Nintendo, the 8-bit era, is hitting its peak.
Can I change my answer? I think the legacy of this show should be Wombat Man. Everyone's favorite character, yep. Wombat Man. Wombat Man. That's my answer.
They wrote an original Wombat Man song. So
they did.
There was original songs on a lot of these episodes, at least in season 2.
I still get that Wombat Man song stuck in my head sometimes.
Me too, and I didn't watch the episode, and I have not seen it in probably 34 years.
Same.
Yep. Okay, so it's time to do plugs. Let's talk about where we can find everybody online before I make you leave. So, Drew, where can we find you online?
I'm on Blue Sky at Drew G. Mackey, M-E-C-K-E, and on podcast-wise, I'm on Gayest Episode Ever. I have episodes with both Henry and Bob, not yet an episode with Henry and Bob together, but I want to do that one day. And I'm thinking Duckman. Duckman?
Oh, I'm down for Duckman.
Okay.
For sure.
And then my website over Weird Video Game Lore is thrillingtalesofoldvideogames.com.
Henry.
Well, of course, you can find me on, I always used to say Twitter first. I'm going to say Blue Sky first now, but I technically still have an account on Twitter, too. And those are both H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G. I'm also on Instagram as Talking Henry. And I say happy holidays to all of you listeners. And if you enjoy hearing me and Bob chat as well, you should check us out on the Talking Simpsons network of podcasts. Patreon.com/Talking Simpsons is where it's supported. Check out TalkingSimpsons.com if you've never seen it before. Us covering every episode of The Simpsons in chronological order. We're doing 5 and 15, seasons 5 and 15 back-to-back right now. We've done so many holiday-related, not just Simpsons episodes, but other cartoons for the What a Cartoon podcast. This month, we're just doing the Beavis and Butthead Christmas special. We're talking about that one. And we've also covered several video game things before. Please see all of the things we do at Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon in podcast land.
And as for Retronauts, we're Retronauts, by the way. And if you want to support us, go to patreon.com/Retronauts and you can find out how to give us money there. And I recommend you do in the spirit of the holidays, because for $5 a month, you get access to a lot of bonus stuff. For the past 5 years now, we've been doing 2 bonus episodes every month. And if you're not a patron, you cannot hear those episodes. And I dare say there's probably close to 100. I can't do math right now. Again, the oxygen levels are dropping. But there's a lot of stuff behind the paywall at patreon.com/retronauts. If you like our show, there's a lot more of it waiting for you, again, at patreon.com/retronauts. And I'm Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter or X as Bob Servo. But now more on Blue Sky as Bob Servo as well. But that has been it for another episode of Retronauts. I'm going to usher Henry and Drew out of here. Please take your game fuel. It smells very bad. I think it has turned. Have a good night, everybody. Well, there you have it. Another Retronauts holiday special in the books. Just don't ask me about the subject matter for next year, because I'm pretty sure this whole 2013 time bubble is purely a temporary thing. And now that I mention it, I'm not even sure if we've lapsed back into late 2024 yet. But I bet there are 3 distinct ways to check. I'll just turn the radio on to the local Parts Unknown pop station here. Oh, the delightful Harlem Shake! And who could forget all of those hilarious videos that employers made their employees do? Let me just turn that off immediately and turn on something a little more Christmassy, of course. Now I'll just check my local listings here. And oh, yeah, there's still time to catch Bad Grandpa in theaters. That's the way they want you to see it. That's the way it should be seen. Now let me just go online to really confirm that it's 2013 here. And oh my God, there's very few video game websites instead of none. This really is the year 2013. And with that, I wish you a happy holiday and a merry making it back to civilization. I'll just be here with the ones I love most, playing the ponies. Good night, everybody! Jingety-jing, it's Dominic the Donkey. Jingety-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La, 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 la.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.